having been posted from Halton and being told to go to Coltishall, I was sent back into London again and came back to catch the train for Coltishall. On arriving, it was that late that the service bus to the station had already returned. So, being a good airman, I reported to the police station, who in turn told me to wait whilst they rang the station. This was done, and in due course I was put into a prison cell where I slept the night with a cup of tea and a sandwich from the sergeant in charge of Norfolk Police Station. This is the only time I have been in prison, but I can say I have spent the night in. On the following morning, of course, there came a picnic up, and I stayed at Coltishall, where I had many pleasant memories. Here, my next station to be posted to was a place called Herne. Now, once again, not known England, somewhere in the wilderness. It turned out it was down on the south coast, looking across the channel. And the place where we were dispersed at was a place known as Stony Cross. What one has to remember at this time was signposts were very deceptive. They didn't always tell you the truth where you were, just in case of enemy invasion. Anyway, I found Stony Cross posted there, and it was in the middle of the New Forest. This is as much as I can tell you about it. What I do know is that there was many, many people, airmen of all descriptions, being posted there. In due course of time, as I found out many moons afterwards, this was the beginning of the 2nd Tactical Air Force where I was concerned. There they formed the first three squadrons of Typhoons with rockets. And they were 181, 182 and 247 squadrons. Here we all once again had to learn to gel together, listen to each other and learn our trades from the lads who were already working on these aircraft. Myself, as an engine fitter, used to Rolls-Royce engines, both cylinders. I found, to my horror, these had 24, and when told to change plugs on the engine, it was 48, which you can imagine is a lot of spark plugs to change and replace and put back together again. But part of the job, we accepted it. These engines were so huge and the propellers were so huge that the engine couldn't be started with the old-fashioned electric starter motors from the batteries on the trolleys, which was pulled to the aircraft to start them up. The means of starting them up was with a Kaufman cartridge. This was one big bang and the prop moved about a third, and in that time you had to actually start the engine. It took great skill to gradually do it, which in turn we all acquired, and the skill and pride was who could start the engine quickest with the least cartridges. We all got to the point where we started them roughly on the first or second cartridge. The problem was the Typhoon. It had such a huge engine. It also had a huge air intake plus cooling system. And inside, if you overprimed them, you could finish up with a backfire and everything was in flame. Here, the flight mech's job airframe, who was stood by, had a pyrene extinguisher. We had to put our hands up out of the aircraft to show we were not going to fire any more cartridges whilst the rigger went in and put the fire out. This was a very scary situation in later days, and on the continent, no lights, no nothings, but sheer hope that we knew each other well enough not to have an accident. These aircraft were huge, and they did everything that we expected them to do with the actual armaments. The armament being 420mm guns and carrying 8 rockets with 60-pound warheads on, which were huge, and these were slid down onto rockets, which could be fired by the pilots either in one pair, two pairs, or the whole lot in one go. When going into service later on, these were devastating in the continental fighting. As we was all getting all used to each other, once again I received yet another posting telling me that I would be posted to Manston in Kent. The reason for this, I found out later, was that in the invasion, only 3 squadrons was going over initially, due to the fact that the aerodrome or landing strip would only have sufficient room for those aircraft. When they went, I don't know, but later I did join them. But for that, from this point, I was posted to 137, which was at Manston, where all the skills I'd already learned was then put into use with the squadron as it was. Having once again been sent around, I did finally find where this Manston Kent was, very close to the coast, and in Ramsgate was then into our local place of relaxation. Here I learned about operational aircraft in its true meaning. But I shall stand down now and continue later. Right. At Manston, I soon found out that on operational duties, it was totally different from the training systems. I had learned at hand the basic necessities to be able to do my job, but at Manston, it was operational. One of the first items I noticed was that here, everything had to run smoothly. First of all, we had a Nissen hut where we had a flight sergeant who was in charge of all the different working units, including the armourers, the fitters, the riggers, the radio operators, and all the other people. My first job was, once again, to meet the lads who I was going to join to look after the
typhoons. The job of looking after it was quite similar to what I'd learnt at Herne, but on this occasion they were operational with rockets on. The process of fitting the rockets was to the armourer's job, who also had the four cannons to attend to as well, plus a camera that laid alongside of the actual body of the aircraft. The reason this was fitted was so that anybody who said they had shot a aircraft or a train or a tank could be verified by the film unit, which was suited so that it followed the tracer down to the ground or the rockets, whichever was being used. Having seen some of these films, they're on the TV, they're absolutely fantastic. So I soon got into the way of doing the right thing at the right time. This basically being seeing the pilot when the scramble was on and meeting him, helping him up into the cockpit, having his straps ready of his parachute so that he could soon put them on, and jumping off and standing by for him to start the engine. Later on, I personally started the engine before the pilot got into the aircraft. This way, giving them a quicker way out and taxiing off into the large runway. At Manston, it has a huge runway. I believe it is only one of two. I was told that it was number one crash runway or crash drome itself for all the lads who were struggling to get back from having been on raids on the coast. Many of the crashes that I did see come in was absolutely spectacular, but unfortunate for the people in the aircraft. This happened quite regularly. When we first got to Manston, we actually had on board a naval unit, and they actually had swordfish of all aircraft, the old-fashioned swordfish with a torpedo slung underneath its body. These did really worry us, but typical Navy, they had armed guards in each corner of their patch of ground, which I personally thought, well, very strange, but the Navy is the Navy and we respected them. Having been with the lads at Manston for a while, we all got to know the aircraft. Each one had its little peculiarity, and the trick was to learn quick so that they could be started up without the fires following. Just after I got there, the problem with doodlebugs started. These was automatic self-propelling jet engines with a bomb underneath. These came over quite regularly, fired either round local areas or heading straight on its way through to London. Our pilots used to be ordered up in pairs to go and watch out for these on patrol. The CO, our flight CO, was a Polish chap, and part of his training for our pilots was to send them up in pairs to go, and if any of the doodlebugs, as they was known, were flying in our direction, providing they was well away from anywhere, they could open fire. They did this by going over to the French coast, as at that point the aircraft was travelling at a far less speed. The problem was to go down and shoot the doodlebug to destroy it, but not to go through the ball of flames which used to burst forth once the whatever the liquid was inside of them caught fire. One pilot, unfortunately, did go through the ball of fire. On arriving back at dispersal, as his aircraft came in, we were all astonished to see that it was soot from the propeller right through to the tail unit, and the pilot was actually handling the aircraft, stood up on his feet and working his pedals to direct it. Upon stopping it in the middle of our dispersal, the CO came out and he was not very happy. And to teach this particular pilot a lesson, he had him wash this aircraft with the old-fashioned gunk. And we did not have to help him. It was a very rough treatment, in my opinion. We always hoping we could go and help, but the CO said, wash the aircraft. And I don't think that pilot ever made the mistake of getting too near again. Which particular one it was, I have no idea. As a new larker, I had not got to know all the pilots. On another occasion, in dispersal, we had a new aircraft come in, put into the dispersal, in between our line of aircraft, and the pilot went. As per usual, we all mucked in, had a look at it, checked it over, and on this occasion we were putting rockets, 60-pound rockets, onto the rails under the wings, ready for instant action, which in this case was a matter where the actual unit and wire had to be plugged in to the aircraft to fire these rockets. Now, the chap who was actually looking after this aircraft did get back into the aircraft to start it up to check how the engine was. Upon the starting procedure going through, this actually fired. Flew from Manston to Cologne, and here we found we rejoined the 124 wing already established at Cologne. Our digs there was at where we all had to sleep in the evenings. The tents basically was large standard tents. The meals had to be cut in the open, and our chairs and tables was on ordinary wooden collapsible tables. Cologne itself was very busy, as here we had rejoined the other three squadrons, which was flying all the time. We in turn joined in with 137 squadron. Whilst there, we had many incidents of aircraft being attacked.